You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrat.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up, we'll talk about a new report from the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism on gun background checks in Wisconsin.
First, criticism of police in America seems to have reached a critical mass in recent months following the deaths of several African-American men at the hands of police, including Philandro Castile of Falcon Heights, Minnesota, and Alton Sterling of Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Our next guest says that while the recent controversies over policing have often been pinned on racial bias, there may be more at play, including the idea of gender and masculinity, and that a hyper-masculine police culture may be a part of police community tensions.
Frank Rudy Cooper joins us now. He's a professor of law at Suffolk University in Boston, Massachusetts, where he studies criminal procedure, cultural studies, and masculinity studies, especially as it applies to policing of men of color. Frank, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Good afternoon, Rob. Thanks for having me on.
Well, as we mentioned in the pieces you've written lately, you say race is a factor in these tensions, but we may be overlooking gender and how it plays into it. Why is that?
Well, I think police officers have long had a tendency to racial profile, and that's been documented in New York City and many other places. But I think that tendency to racial profile is aggravated by a simultaneous tendency towards machismo. And I could give an example of what I mean by machismo or masculinity when it comes to sort of criminal law.
Yeah, go ahead and talk through that example.
Sure. So I'm getting ready to teach criminal law tomorrow morning. So on my mind is the fact that the reasonable man acts in a heat of passion when he sees his wife in adultery. And that's a doctrine in the criminal law that applies or traditionally has applied more to men than to women. And that just speaks to our expectations of men are sometimes a little different than our expectations of women. I certainly wouldn't argue that masculinity is nature, but scholars such as Carol Gilligan have pointed out that in general, men have more of a tendency to act in an aggressive and hierarchical way, and in general, women have more of a tendency to act in a compromise-oriented fashion. So I've just looked at that possibility that masculinity is leading police officers, certainly male police officers, sometimes maybe female police officers, to act in an aggressive way when they're confronted with suspects.
Right. And as you say, that isn't necessarily natural that masculinity behaves in that way. But do you see it as a cultural way of behaving for men in particular? Do you see that as being even more so in police culture than in culture at large?
Absolutely, I think it's cultural. And in police culture, we know that we pull police officers from parts of our culture that are more masculine or certainly more aggressive than other parts of our culture, like the military. So almost every police department gives a significant advantage to veterans of the military. That's great. In certain ways, right? We do want to prioritize people who have served our country, but that's a culture that is more aggressive, and if that's brought into the police culture, you're going to see a police culture that's more aggressive than the rest of our culture is.
Well, somebody might make the case that, well, maybe there's an upside to that. Police are, in many cases, dealing with criminals, maybe dealing with violent behavior, maybe coming in with that tough guy mindset in a way prepares them to deal with that more than other people maybe in civilian America.
That may be the case, and I certainly acknowledge that there are times when I want police officers to be aggressive. So there's a concept in policing called command presence. And command presence just means taking charge of a situation. But you can take charge of a situation with your voice, or you can take charge of a situation with your fists, or your baton, or your taser, or your gun. And my concern is that police officers who have more of a tendency towards a sort of macho attitude may be more likely to respond with violence earlier than they need to.
Talking to Frank Rudy Cooper, he's a law professor looking at what he sees as often a problem of masculinity, a macho culture in police culture. Frank, walk us through how this might work out in a bad way, in an encounter between an officer and a suspect, especially maybe a black young male suspect, or
right,
not even a suspect, I guess, a civilian.
Yeah, so if you think of a civilian who's out there like Philando Castile, and they're stopped by the police for, say, a traffic violation, there's potential for macho posturing on both sides. You've got somebody as a young black male who may have been stopped many times by the police and, because of our history of racial profiling, may not believe that they've been appropriately stopped, or at least that they haven't been stopped at a time when other people would have been stopped. So, you know, if you're a man and you are feeling, man or woman really, but if you're feeling that this is a sign of disrespect, and you draw on our cultural sort of assumption that a man responds aggressively to disrespect, then you may have a civilian who is ready for a conflict. And then you can take the Sandra Bland case, where the police officer, you know, was ready to light her up with his taser because she wouldn't put out her cigarette when he was talking to her. Now, that's disrespectful, no question of that. But does it require the immediate move to violence and to an arrest? I don't think that it does. I think both of those are situations where you can see from the civilian side or the police officer side that it might be that a sense that you have to be shown respect is something that could exacerbate a potential conflict.
So a hyper-masculine idea that any disrespect has to be treated as a challenge, I guess, and escalated. Is that what you're seeing working out here?
Absolutely. So the idea behind hyper-masculinity, just a really strong version of masculinity, would be that you can't brook any disrespect. And then in police culture, there is some good reason for feeling that you have to maintain control of situations, and that leads some police officers to have a quick trigger for wanting to shut down disrespect.
You're hoping for a different kind of training for police officers to still, as you said, take command of a situation when needed, but not by escalating that situation. What would that kind of training look like?
So there are a variety of options out there. One that I've mentioned in a past article is called verbal judo. And I don't necessarily want to endorse this particular method, but I think something like this might be helpful. Verbal judo is that you train the police officer to sort of spar with the suspect verbally. So the suspect is some young kid who's in front of his or her friends and wants to mouth off to the cop. The cop could sort of jaw back at the civilian, but in a way that takes the situation down. Look, I know you're in front of your friends. You know, you don't want to be shown, you know, disrespect by a police officer. That's fine. Here's how we can clear up this situation. Here's how I can get the information that I need without my having to respond to my baton or something else to deal with you. So verbal judo is more a matter of sort of getting the upper hand on somebody verbally. But what I imagine is something more along the lines of, we don't have to be in a conflict here, right? All I need is this information from you. You know, where's your license, or what are you doing in this area? There's been a call about you. I just want to clear it up. And I refer to that as de-escalation.
A lot of people, and I've seen this in comments, logs, and editorials, things like that, will look at a situation where an encounter between a police officer and a citizen escalates. There's disrespect shown on both sides. It keeps building on each other, and people saying both sides are more or less equally to blame. And you don't buy that.
No, I don't. Police officers, they are sworn to serve and protect. They are given the power to kill people, and they need to be more responsible than the typical civilian. I expect them to have a higher threshold for their temper. I expect them to be better behaved than I am. That's what they're paid for. As a law professor, I get paid to be clear in explaining certain concepts in the law. They get paid to manage conflict, and most of them are much better, certainly, than I am at managing conflict. But when they're not, when they're just like any other hot-headed young civilian, I blame the person who's been given a gun and the responsibility of managing conflict more than I blame the hot-headed kid.
Do you think if training is changed, if police go more and more toward de-escalation rather than the use of force to control situations, do you think that benefits ultimately the police themselves?
I think it absolutely could. One of the things that came out about racial profiling was that the police were often harming themselves by being seen as picking on racial minorities. So then they went back into the racial minority community to get information about a crime that happened there or elsewhere, and there was a stop snitching sort of attitude. And perhaps the racial profiling led people to feel, you just don't talk to the police, period. So that's one problem. Another thing I think is that if the police are seen as not looking for conflict, they're likely to just deal with less potential conflict. Civilians are more likely, if they see police officers as peace brokers, to take their own sort of more peaceful attitude towards the police, not to be on edge and fearful every time they encounter the police. And certainly police officers want more peaceful citizens.
We're talking to Frank Rudy Cooper. He's a professor of law at Suffolk University. He recently wrote a piece called America's Police Culture Has a Masculinity Problem.
And we want to know what you think. Would you agree with our guest's assessment that so-called masculine behavior might be driving some of the current pressure points between police officers and communities of color? And if so, how do you think these behaviors should be addressed? Or do you disagree with this assessment? Why do you think that is? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you in just a moment here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickard, and we're talking with law professor Frank Rudy Cooper. In a recent piece, he says America's police culture has a masculinity problem and that a hyper-masculine police culture may be contributing to current tensions between police and communities of color.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think these kind of macho attitudes are partly to blame for police violence in America, for tough relationships between police and the communities they serve? Call in now. 800-642-1234. What's the solution? 800-642-1234 is the number. We'll go to our callers now. We've got Ben with us in La Crosse. Ben, hi.
Hi.
What do you think?
I've had the opportunity over the years to participate in some police weapons and tactics training sessions, and I think the professor view in many cases is accurate. I just wanted, the comment I wanted to make was that I think the part of the problem is that the police really are, and I'm sure the professor will agree with this, that the police are representatives of the court. And many citizens feel under the Constitution that they should be afforded all the protections under the Constitution when dealing with the justice system. But many police see themselves not as representatives of the court, but rather as an embodiment of the law itself. So people have to obey them because they are the law.
Interesting, Ben. Thanks for the call. Frank, what do you think?
Well, I absolutely agree that police officers ought to think of themselves as having a responsibility not to impose something like contempt of cop. So a lot of people are familiar with the fact that there's contempt of court, and that's because a court has the inherent power to punish you for disobeying the court in the courtroom. But police officers don't have that power, and sometimes they try and exercise a power to say, you can't disrespect me, you can't obstruct me, and that's not right as a matter of the law. Police officers represent the executive branch, and so they're a little bit different than representing the court, but I agree with the sentiment that Ben expressed.
Thanks for the call, Ben. We'll go next to Seth in Oshkosh. Seth, hi.
Hi. Yeah, my, I guess, view on it is, we're hiring these young cops at 23, 24, and sometimes even younger. And myself and a lot of friends, most males, remember when you were at that age, you knew everything, you had a temper, and you were a hothead. And I think we could solve a lot of the problems if they would hire cops maybe in their 30s to have, dealt with people, dealt with real situations. I mean, I know kids come right out of high school, they go to the academy, and they're becoming cops, and they've never had a drink themselves, never dealt with a drunk person, never dealt with a person on drugs and whatnot, I know they're trained to deal with these people, but until you get some real life training on your belt, it's, you know, they're going to be hotheads. And then you give them a badge and a gun and the power that, you know, they are the judge and the jury, and it's just going to lead to problems until we change, I believe, the age at which you hire young cops.
Seth, thanks for the call. So maybe not just race and gender, he's saying, but age, young men, masculinity, Frank, being part of the problem. What do you think?
Well, I absolutely agree with Seth, and I think of the old joke, teenagers move out of the house while you still know everything. And I certainly think that in my 20s, I had a similar experience of I thought I knew a lot more than I knew. The solution, it seems to me, is in our hiring processes. So I mentioned training earlier as one way to get police officers to de-escalate. And another way is to hire people who already come in with a sort of negotiation mentality rather than an aggressive and violence-oriented mentality.
Is there something to be said? Does it make a difference if there are more women on police forces?
It has. The research suggests that it does make a difference, at least in terms of police violence and claims of misconduct. Now, why is that so? Who knows? Is it nature? Is it nurture? I tend to think that it's nurture. And, of course, this doesn't apply to all women. It doesn't mean that just because you're dealing with a female cop that you're going to get a peaceful cop. And it doesn't mean that because you're dealing with a male cop, you're going to get a particularly aggressive cop.
Talking to Frank Rudy Cooper. He's a law professor looking at issues of masculinity in police departments. Wanted to bring race back directly into this, Frank. Is there something about hyper-masculinity? An officer is going to read disrespect more so in the hands into the actions of a certain community, say young men of color?
Yes, I'm afraid so. We know about the racial tensions that have existed in this country from slavery to Jim Crow to contemporary forms of more implicit bias. And that's been focused among the police on young men of color, particularly blacks and Latinos. So I think that there is a lower threshold for feeling threatened by these young men of color. And that's unfortunate. It's something that's getting a lot better, but it's something we have to work on.
Let's bring back our callers now. We've got Gene on the line in Ashland. Gene, hi.
Hi. How about measuring anger point, like boiling point, for everyone? Seems like this can vary among different groups, but in their culture, they're trained to, if they just... assume or detect what they think is disrespect, they can hardly think after that.
Thanks for the call, Gene. So something about dealing with anger in particular, Frank, and maybe assessment of officers and how they handle anger and things that make them angry.
Yes, well, Gene's point again goes to the question of hiring. So we might want to have some additional evaluative methods for figuring out when people are likely to get angry and how they manage their anger. Certainly there are protocols in certain police departments where if you're involved in a conflict, they try and rotate that police officer away from the scene and let others manage that situation. And that seems like best practices. If there's been some kind of shouting match between a police officer and a civilian, and then other officers are coming on the scene, let the officers who can take a fresh eye at the situation deal with the situation.
So what would you like to see happen next? How do we start to change this, what you see as a culture of hyper-masculinity in many police departments?
I think changes in hiring. I think changes in training would be very important. And part of that is that we spend a lot of time training police officers how to handle their weapons, which is important, and very little time teaching them about implicit bias. Certainly in Boston now, Commissioner Evans has been a leader in adding implicit bias training to the training of police officers, and I think that's very important. I'd just like to see more people emphasize the acknowledgement of tensions between police officers in certain communities, and then the training with how to manage those tensions without resorting to violence.
You've been studying and researching this for some time, Frank. Have you gotten any feedback from police officers, from police departments? Do they want to hear what you're saying? Do they want to tackle these problems?
Yeah, so I haven't gotten a lot of direct feedback from them, although I had Commissioner Evans in my criminal procedure class, and as a general matter, I think he thinks it's important to change the way that police officers are trained. At a more general level, there is increasing training on implicit bias across the country, and I'm really glad to see that. So I think that there are some changes coming. We'll have to see how far they go. In Boston recently, Boston has been one of the more progressive police departments because of Commissioner Evans, but recently the police officers sued to try and prevent the use of body cameras. I have to say that, honestly, I'm not the biggest fan of body cameras, but suing to prevent them seems counter to thinking of yourself as a sort of subject to civilian review rather than immune from it.
And very briefly, as we wrap up, Frank, I mean, with the issues of race, some people have said you can't just treat the police departments. They're us. They're the society that they live in. Do you think the same is true when it comes to masculinity?
I do think that that's right, that you have to treat in some ways the society, and there is more acknowledgement of the problems of masculinity bubbling up in the schools, and hopefully that trickles down to police departments.
Frank, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you, Robin. Thank you, Veronica.
We've been talking to Frank Rudy Cooper. He's a professor of law at Suffolk University in Boston, Massachusetts, where he studies criminal procedure, cultural studies, and masculinity studies, especially as it applies to policing of men of color. He joined us to talk about a recent piece he wrote, and we'll have that up at the Central Time Facebook page. In that piece, he looks at America's police culture and masculinity. Again, check out that piece and share your thoughts on that issue. You can do that at the Central Time Facebook page. And of course, as with any topic, you can tweet us at Central Time WPR.